Why do people not just do this all the time? Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're climbing the rungs of cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. I'm Zach Brooks, and for the 219th time, I'm joined by
Brendan Fitzpatrick.
And we're not alone, Brendan.
We are not.
Third time, I believe.
Fourth.
I don't have these counts in front of me. But fourth time. Tony Starks, yeah. Back on the Movie Ladder Podcast.
I'm back, bitches.
Woo-hoo.
Welcome me.
Yes.
Welcome. Nice.
Welcome to the big wide world where Tanya starts.
Yeah. I'm really creating my own cinematic universe for podcasting.
Fantastic.
Nice. Well, last week we talked about Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yes.
And this week, due to a Mark Ruffalo and Brain connection, we are going to be talking about a movie that just won some Academy Awards just a couple days ago. And that is the 2020 Academy Award winner, two-time Academy Award winner, Emma Stone. Then at the end of the episode, we'll decide on our next movie based on suggestions sent. We brought as your host. So we'll be spoiling Poor Things. If you haven't seen it, it is on Hulu. And also it's on Disney Plus.
Yep.
So you can, that's where I watched it. I watched it on Disney Plus. No, Disney Plus in America. I watched it.
Is it Disney Plus in America too? That's wild. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Yep. Wow. As part of the, like, if you have both, you can watch on both.
Got it.
So
got
it. If you type POO into Disney Plus, you get a lot of poo content and you also get Poor Things. So make sure.
Well, there's a lot of poo content in Poor Things. So, you know, the next step.
Yes, in a way.
In a way. But, a lot of butt stuff is what I mean, Zach.
Oh my gosh.
If you don't feel like hearing us, if you don't feel like hearing us talk about Poor Things and you just want to skip ahead, here we're going to be watching for episode number 220 next week. You can do that. The timestamp is in the podcast description. For some of you, you're lucky enough that you can click that timestamp and jump ahead to when we start picking for next week. And as always, submit your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, movieladder@gmail.com, movieladder on Letterboxd. That's all the fun stuff. LT, I think it's the first time in 2 years that we've had you back on the podcast. How have things been going?
Things have been pretty good. Very busy. Lots of podcasting happening. Sadly, PSR is coming to an end. So I'm looking at branching out and doing some other stuff. So that's pretty cool. And I've also got my stuff with RHAP. Just been really busy.
Other stuff as in podcast stuff or other stuff just like new ventures in life?
New ventures, but also podcasting things.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I'll talk about the stuff that I've been working on a little bit later. But yeah, it's kind of, you know, one of the things that is interesting about PSR coming to an end is that it produced all of these great podcasters. And mm-hmm. it's going to mm-hmm. be exciting to see what we end up doing afterwards. And, you know, people hopefully will like continue to follow us, even though we're no longer going to be with Post Show Recaps.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely the hope. I mean, you know, every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end, I believe the song goes. So, you know,
just quoting Closing Time now.
I'm now just quoting Closing Time. Yes. So, you know, the cliches, you know, one door closes, another one opens, et cetera, yeah. et cetera. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's,
you know, selfishly, I will say that, you know, I'm sad for you guys that PSRR is coming yeah. to a close, but I am happy because I feel like we have a lot of new, like, guests who are readily available to do podcasts that we can bring
yeah.
up.
Exactly. PSR's loss is your gain for sure.
For sure. Yeah. So, well, I mean, you know,
do not pay for appearances, but you can join and have fun with us for 2 hours.
Yeah. I mean, Zach, you had your own time at PSR. I mean, you were one of the first podcasters on that network. I mean, you put your own stamp on the early years. So, you know, we all, mm-hmm. you know, we all benefited from PSR at a certain point in time.
Mm-hmm.
True. Yep. Yep. Well, Latanya, usually we like to start this with like the best thing you watched since the last time you were on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But before I do that, I do have a question. Since you're talking about PSR and PSR coming to mm-hmm. close, what is the best thing that you podcasted about at your time? Like, what is your favorite thing that you podcasted about at Post Show Recaps?
Huh, that's hard. Like
picking your favorite child.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's a true Sophie's choice. I did have a lot of fun, and this may be just recency bias, but you know, it exists for a reason. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of fun podcasting with Mike Bloom and Grace Leader about Fargo.
Yeah,
that was very podcast. Good. The most recent season of Fargo, Taste the Goodness of the Biscuit. Mm-hmm. And that was a good time. I have to also admit, like, I'm quite partial to this experience. Brendan was a part of this as well. We podcasted about Andor. That felt like peak podcasting, like, content for me.
I agree. That was a lot of fun. And like, we really started hitting our stride like around the second or third episode and just podcasted the crap out of that show. And I'm really bummed that we didn't get to do a season two with TSR. But hopefully, you know, if Andor does come later this year, maybe we'll figure out a way to get the crew back together in the old spaceship and take off.
We
once
have
more,
to get back together. Yeah. Like, it's just not even a question at this point.
It's really
I've gotten soft yeses from everyone involved. I will haunt your dreams until you all agree to podcast about Andor season two.
I mean, the nice thing is there's so many places to like post a pod, you know, Spotify for Podcasters that we use is free. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many ways to get that content out there, and you've already done the hard part, which is like finding the crew. And getting chemistry.
Yeah.
So nice. Yeah. I'm looking forward to Andor. I didn't realize it was coming this year. I thought it was further out.
It's this year. I believe it's gonna be very excited.
Mm-hmm. I think it's gonna be very late this year, but this year mm-hmm. it should be.
That's fine. Late is fine.
Yeah.
Gives just me more time to
just
rewatch
in time to qualify
one.
For the Oscars, because you know the Oscars are always giving awards to television shows as
absolutely.
They should.
Yeah.
You know, they did. It's funny because the Wes Anderson shorts, the Roald Dahl Wes Anderson shorts, Netflix, now that it's won the Oscar for best short, the Henry Sugar one, they now announced like it's an anthology and you can watch them like basically like a TV show. And it's like, oh, they just waited until they won their Oscar and then made it a TV show.
That's really funny. It would have been nice if they had done that when it actually dropped on Netflix so that you didn't have to search for each one individually. But
yes, because I had no idea what order to watch them, and I watched them this week. And I had no idea. I was like, all right, I'm just going to do this. And then like I listened to FilmSpotty, and they were talking about them in the order they watched them, and I was like, mm-hmm. oh, that sounds a little bit better. But oh well.
All right. That's
a preample. Latanya, what's the best thing you've watched? You can say this week, or if you want to go way back in the last 2 years since you're on the podcast, you can pick something.
This week, I mean, I guess I could do both. I really enjoyed Past Lives quite a bit. Why are you laughing?
Well, because before the podcast, I usually will Wikipedia the movie to pull up the wiki page before we start, and I accidentally typed in Past Lives instead of Poor Things.
You know, so. it's a great film.
It is.
I know it was nominated for Best Picture, but mm-hmm. none of the performances got any recognition, and nor did Celine Song as director, because, you know, you're only allowed one woman every year. Mm-hmm. But I just thought that it was kind of a little masterpiece of a movie. Everybody has that like kind of past life where you have kind of the one that got away mm-hmm. that you managed to remain friends with or keep in touch with that person, and it's always interesting to think about what life would be like with them or what it would be like if they were to somehow infiltrate your current life. Mm-hmm. And that definitely happened. And it was done in such a, like, just a gentle way that I thought that it was a little bit of a miracle of a movie, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one that I've visited a couple times. I've watched it twice now. And mm-hmm. both times I've come away. It's funny because sometimes I'll rewatch a movie and then reread my initial Letterboxd review for it, because I like to just like, I use Letterboxd just like my diary. Like, what are my thoughts immediately after watching the movie? And both times I had like the exact same feeling that I was like, this movie is so much about like, just that like missed connection, you know, that like what if, like it's so much about what if, and like that like not missed connection necessarily. And like, I don't even watch it of like a, like, I'm blanking on the two characters' names, but like Hey Son is the male character, right? Is that his name?
Yes.
And Greta Lee's character, that like that I'm like, oh, they should be together. Like, it's not even that, but it's like about like the like paths travel that you take in life, and like that that concept of like different lives, like playing out differently. Like I love one of the first movies we did on this podcast was Sliding Doors, and I feel like Past Lives and Sliding Doors share like so much of that like shared DNA.
Yeah, I also have to give a shout out here because I suspect that it has not gotten much love on this podcast. For Barbie, it's just a fantastic movie with an amazing soundtrack that I love, and it brings a smile to my face and makes me happy. And I thought that Ryan Gosling's performance of I'm Just Ken at the Oscars was one of the best performances ever.
Great.
At an Oscar.
Very good.
I think that was one of the best moments of the entire night. Like it one was. Of the best moments of the Oscars of the last 10 years. Like it was fantastic. I love that he was so into it, bringing that like Disney kid energy that he has. Like he's, you know, if people don't know, he was in the Mickey Mouse Club when he was a kid in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And so he's got that like stage performer vibe to him when he really wants to turn it on, and I thought he was really fantastic at the Oscars. So yeah
and I just feel like when I first heard that they were going to be doing a Barbie movie was when like Amy Schumer was attached to it.
Yes.
And I could not visualize in my head what a Barbie movie would look like. I know that there's tons of IP out there of like, you know, Barbie animated stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's for kids. Not that this movie isn't, but there are definitely like more like adult themes in the movie as well. I also think that like Margot Robbie doesn't get enough credit because she's so beautiful. She's one of those like pretty privileged people that kind of like suffers as a result of that. But I thought that her performance was really great and nuanced. Again, like the soundtrack was amazing. I'm still upset that Dance the Night was not nominated for best song over that Diane Warren Hot Cheetos movie song.
Well, I guess there's rules that you can only have two songs per movie apparently. But I do think it should have been nominated over
the one that won.
The one that
what won. What was I made for? Which was. I'm sorry, the performance of that at the Oscars, which is so slow and so
it was just
boring.
Like every other performance
work.
That they
work.
Did of that song.
Yeah. Yeah. It just didn't
it's
work.
Just her standing next to a piano with her brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just no good. But I mean, I really like Barbie. It didn't end up in my top 10 this year because this was such a strong year, but I really do admire and love Margot Robbie. I mean, we just talked about her a few weeks ago in Wolf of Wall Street, where she's playing against Leo, and that is sort of her big coming out role. Like, she's fantastic in that. Yeah. And then she follows that up with, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and then Babylon, and she's fantastic in both of those. So, yeah. I mean, she's a really great actress. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting we're talking so much about Barbie because I do think that it is, for me, like the leading contender for next week. You know, potentially LT, you might be back next week. We might do back to back and have you
amazing
talk about Barbie again next
I'll
week.
Come back and talk about Barbie anytime.
Hi, Barbie.
Okay. All right. Hi, LaTanya. All right. And did you have something from the last 2 years, real quick, that you wanted to shout out? I know you said you were going to do both. And it's okay if you don't.
Yeah. There's just so many movies.
I know.
Yeah, tell me about
so
it.
Much stuff that has been good. I mean, I'll shout out American Fiction.
Yes.
It's technically it's this past year, but like it's technically the last 2 years. That movie went in a lot of directions that I was not expecting it to.
So
I was also not expecting Cord Jefferson to win an Oscar for best adapted screenplay, but I'm
so
very happy that he did. Mm-hmm. He's so close to EGOTting now.
Yeah, and your podcast about that with Chappelle and who else
Mari.
Was on that pod? Mari. It was Mari. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Was really fantastic. People
Thank
should
you.
Check it out. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. You were one of the few podcasts about it, so I was very happy to have your content. I loved American Fiction. I thought it was so much fun. Yeah.
All right. Well, Brennan, what's the best thing you watched this week?
Speaking of Oscar-nominated films, I will shout out the Wim Wenders film Perfect Days, which I watched over the weekend. This movie is freaking fantastic. It was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film. It centers around a man who's basically his job is to go around his city he lives in downtown Tokyo and clean toilets for a living. And you basically follow this character as he takes in his daily routine every day. And just it's about finding joy in the little things of life and where the little moments of life can take you. And just like basically enjoying every moment that you're in this universe and taking pride in the things that you do, even if you know they're going to get messed up as soon as you walk out of the room. Because, I mean, his job is literally to clean toilets. As soon as he's done, somebody else is coming in there and all that work, you know, goes away. But he never thinks about it that way. He just does it every day. And it's the soundtrack is really fantastic. It's filled with really great 70s and 80s rock, which Wim Wenders did a really good interview at the end of the Big Picture podcast from February. It's tagged on to the 1991 movie draft for some reason, but forward through that and listen to the Wim Wenders interview with Sean Fennessy. If you watch Perfect Days, it's one of my favorite movies of the year. It immediately shot into my top 10. Highly recommend it. Perfect Days. Yeah.
Nice. It seems like that, like, I haven't watched it yet. It was on my list to get to before the Oscars. I didn't get to it. But it does feel like that has, like, a little bit, like, talking about shared DNA. Like, it sounds a little, like, similar to Zone of Interest in a way, where it's, like, about, like, banal, like the banality. The banality? Like,
yeah, but it's a much happier film.
In a very different way. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a much happier film than Zone of Interest.
I would hope so. That's not a very high bar to clear, to be honest.
Yeah.
All right, nice. Well, we've already talked about a lot of the stuff that's on my list from this week. I did a lot of Oscar catch up over the last couple of days. I'm going to shout out American Fiction because I watched that, I think, the day after we recorded last week's podcast. And I also just thought it was like, I thought the writing was really sharp. I think there was some stuff that was just really, for me, it's really hard to hit satire. I think like Barbie is an example of satire that like it just was too on the nose for me, didn't quite work. What is it? Don't Look Up is another one where it's like the satire. I just like didn't like, it's just like too blunt of an instrument. Right. And I feel like this, like the satire felt very nuanced, and nuanced is a word I'm going to use when we talk about Poor Things as well. I thought it really hit the right notes. I think there's like a really good commentary on just kind of like the state of the way that we consume media. It reminded me a lot of like adaptation and, you know, like all of the stuff with the writing process and being stuck and like the way that you have to represent your writing to get it accepted. Like, I just thought like it was really good. And then the cast was like everybody in the cast. I was just like, oh, I just want to watch. Like, I want this to be like a Wes Anderson movie where this whole cast just keeps coming together and making movies together, like this troupe. So.
Yeah, I really love the cast of American Fiction. I think that, you know, I'm going to state the obvious thing, but like, what I really admire most about the film is how well it executed the meta narrative of the making of this film in the first place. Like, in order to get this wonderful drama about a Black family surrounding, you know, Sterling K. Brown and Jeffrey Wright, and the actual, like, really good drama of that movie, you had to make this absurd movie about a writer trying to write an absurd satire of a novel in order to get
that's like the whole adaptation part, right?
Yeah,
like that's
so I like really admired how well executed that was. I thought that that was brilliant.
And Latanya, you have a podcast on it already? You have American Fiction podcast?
Yeah, one of the if not the last movie that we did for post-show recaps for The Connect was American Fiction with Mie Chappelle and Mari. I definitely was not expecting all of the family drama that happened in the movie, and I was not expecting to be triggered as much as I was by it. It was a bit of a difficult watch because like I had to put my grandmother in a nursing home because of dementia, and I was like, where the hell did that come from? I thought this was supposed to be about the literary world, but still very good. Like, still recommend it.
the family tragedy that happens right at the beginning of the movie, like, was so jarring to me. It was just, like, so, like, visceral, I felt like. Like, when it happened, you were, because the movie is, like, light, you know, it's kind of light on its feet. Like, the way it starts, like, it's so light, there were a number of really funny parts. Yeah, I think that's, like, it's a movie that I could see myself coming back to and really appreciating now that I know kind of as it was made. And I just made myself a note, so if I forget, it is my fault, to link to Latanya's American Fiction podcast in the show notes for this. So if you haven't heard it yet, I will link out to the post-show recaps link so you can check it out. So, all right. With that, shall we, speaking of Oscar-nominated movies, should we talk about Poor Things?
Mm-hmm. Yes, let us get to the furious jumping.
All right, well... and I thought, like, I think I might have said this either on the podcast or off the podcast, like, oh, like, it's great that we're doing an Oscar nominated Best Picture nominee the week of the Oscars. Like, how good job by us. Well, then I look back at the archives and realize we did the same thing with Banshees of Inisherin last year. So we were consistent that we do a Best Picture nominee the week of the Oscars. So that's good.
Best Picture loser.
Yeah, true. Yeah, yeah. You don't want to be picked by the Movie Ladder podcast to be the Oscar movie.
Apparently, you are not gonna apparently win, you will not win. Because two is a rule, right?
Yeah, I will say that Poor Things probably overperformed. I mean, obviously winning Best Actress.
Four really great awards. Best Actress, Best Costume and Makeup, and then Best, what was it, Production Design and... sorry, Something Makeup else. And we'll... Hairstyling, Costumes, Production Design, and Best Actress. So there you go.
All right.
Pretty impressive.
So this is a rewatch for both of us. Latanya, I'd love to know, was this a rewatch for you? Did you see this already, or did you watch it this week heading up to the Oscars / this podcast?
I had not watched this one until this week.
Fantastic.
Great. Yeah, I don't know how I managed to not see it, because I love Yorgos Lanthimos. I love his movies. They're quirky and ridiculous and over the top. And I'm a big fan. So I kind of shocked myself by waiting so long to see this one. I think that, I know we'll talk about it, but I think that this is kind of like an obvious, amazing performance by Emma Stone. I also feel like it's a performance that she could have done in her sleep. You know, like, we've just seen so much range from her, especially recently, that I just kind of feel like this is old hat for her, which is a little bit why I was rooting for Lily Gladstone in the Oscars.
But, yeah, I think especially this coming out the like right around the same time as The Curse too. Did you? I know Brandy didn't watch The Curse yet. Latanya, did you watch The Curse?
I watched half of The Curse.
Oh my god, the finale is amazing. You gotta watch the finale.
I have a thing about how, like, when things start to get a little too squeamish, like, not in, like, a horror way, but just, like, in a Curb Your Enthusiasm way, I just can't do it.
That's exactly how I am, too. That's why I never started it or any of that other Nathan Fielder stuff.
Oh, God,
I can't
I
do
it.
I'm just like, nope, I'm good.
Well, I would say if you can, the finale is almost like a mini movie. You can watch the finale without watching the rest of the series, although I think the rest of the series, like, builds up well. But it's got kind of a similar tone to this movie in terms of just being like, it's like this weird abstract horror, basically. And it's... yeah, I think, like, especially those two performances. I mean, I think I saw this while that show was airing. So, like, what a back half of 2023 for Emma Stone and that she was reported. So Tani, you just watched this movie. Did you like it? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I did like it. I thought that it was a really interesting way to tell almost a coming of age story. It's very extreme to take the still living body of a pregnant woman who, you know, tried to commit suicide, and then take her baby and take the baby's brain and put it into the woman's body and just kind of have her go through all of the stages of life and becoming a woman. That is like a lofty goal to set out to do in a movie. They managed to make it work really well. I thought all of the characters in this movie felt believable for the setting of the movie, mm-hmm. not necessarily like in our world, but for this world, they felt believable. And I just, you know, I find a lot of the, you know, because there was a lot of controversy around this movie as well mm-hmm. from like the disabled community and mm-hmm. also controversy about the fact that, you know, it's the Born Sexy Yesterday trope, you know, where it's like the mind of a men being attracted to the mind of a child inside, you know, of a woman's body.
I haven't heard of that trope before, but that makes sense.
Yeah, there are ways that the themes and actions of this film could have gone terribly, terribly wrong, especially with the way that the men in this film interact with Bella, both physically and emotionally. And with, I think without the performance of Emma Stone and the writing of that character and how strong the writing is, this film could have been like seen as just like absolute, like kind of, I'm trying to think of the right words, like bad, like B movie pornography almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Where like, because she is physically and emotionally abused from moment one of this film. I mean, the first thing Mark Ruffalo's character does when he meets her is sit down next to her and put his finger, you know, in the place where you shouldn't put your finger without asking someone. You know, like that's,
you know, that place.
Well, and before that, even she's locked in the mansion, right? She's not even allowed outside. Exactly. So like before that even happens, I mean, like, and I actually think like the Godwin character, and I'm like
so simple, conflicted about that character.
Well, I think that it's I love that his name is God, and it's not that he's called like it's short for Godwin. Maybe that is a simple thing.
It's definitely like a metaphor. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Clearly. Yeah. But like I remember when I saw this movie the first time, I was like, that's like so clever. Like it's not even that like profound of a thing. But I also noticed that the Rami Yusuf character on this watch, his name is McCandless, and they refer to him a couple times as Candle. And I was thinking like he's like a candle that kind of lights the way for her like in this growth, especially in the first segment of this movie. So I kind of like again like another name that we use. I was trying to pay attention to other names. I could get others.
Two things. Yes. Mary Shelley. I believe Mary mm-hmm. Shelley's father's name was Godwin.
Oh,
nice.
And also, I think that like in keeping with what you said, Brendan, I think that this movie would have been very different if Emma Stone had not been a producer on this movie.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm. Because you know, like there's all types of talk about like actresses and nude scenes and how like mm-hmm. exploitative it could be.
Yeah.
But with her being a producer, she didn't do anything that she didn't feel comfortable doing. And she was like a part of the genesis of all of these scenes as well.
Yeah, it felt like we were, it felt like we were being let into the agency of both the character and the performers. You know what I mean? Like we were being told it's okay to watch this as we're watching it. And that made it more enjoyable for me. Because I think, like, there's a reading of this film where both the Willem Dafoe character as God and Mark Ruffalo's character, you know, are, Duncan Weatherburn, are just, like, absolute monsters. And you can't see the humor in them because you can't get past what they do to, you know, to Bella throughout this film. And I think that those performances are just so abstract and so absurd mm-hmm. that it allows you to enjoy them. Like on this watch, I really, really took in more of the Willem Dafoe performance than I did the first time, because you know, as someone with a visual disability, I was really disconnected to that character the first time I saw this movie, because it was like making me a little bit uncomfortable to mm-hmm. a degree to mm-hmm. like. And then, like, but this watch, when I knew, because I didn't see the trailer for this, I didn't know anything, and so it sort of took me out of it at first, the first time I saw it. And then this time, I was paying more attention to the things he says and does than just, like, you know, focusing on his physicality. And it mm-hmm. really was like, oh, so he basically was all basically, this is a film about generational trauma.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because Godwin Baxter is Frankenstein's monster. He then creates his own Frankenstein's monster, who goes on to create her own Frankenstein's monster from her ex-husband. Mm-hmm. So, this is a movie about how we pass on and how we teach different types of trauma as, from generation to generation. And I think that that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's an interesting read on it. So this watch for me was much different. The first time I saw it, I didn't know anything about it. I am, unlike you, Latanya, and I don't really know where Brendan falls on it, but I am a little bit more hot and cold on Yorgos movies. I always appreciate that they are different, but a lot of times I feel like they're different for the sake of being weird. The first time I saw The Lobster, I really didn't like it. And, it's one I would be interested to go back to now that I've seen more of his movies. I do really like Killing of a Sacred Deer, which I feel like is the one people talk about the least.
I love that movie.
And The Favorite didn't really do much for me. I just didn't find it very interesting. Yeah. I went into Poor Things thinking I'll see this because it's Yorgos movie. And I had friends who actually went to the theater with friends. And I was dying laughing at this the first time I saw it. I thought it was hilarious. And I walked out and I was five star. This is my number. I think it was my number two movie of last year on my list. Mm. And I absolutely loved it. And I especially really loved the first half. On this watch last night at home, not in the theater. I still really like it, and I appreciate what it's doing, but I am a little bit cooler on it than I was the first watch. And I think it's because, it's such a provocative movie that the first time I was watching it, I just had no idea where we were going. And this time, knowing where we were going, I felt like we just, sat in things for so, the different episodes we were in, I was just we were there for so long with each one. I love the first half. I absolutely love the first half, and I love her discovery. And I think, it's almost a shame that so much of this movie gets boiled down to talking about the sexual stuff in this, because I think just the character discovering the world element and discovering all kinds of things that she likes in the world, stuffing her face with the pastries in Portugal. And when it's about hedonism more and just why can't I do this thing that I enjoy doing? And not just why can't I have sex all the time? Cause that's what I enjoy doing. But why can't I eat this pastry? Why can't I say this thing? Because it's, why can't I say I want to punch this baby? Why can't I
go punch this baby?
Right. Why can't I do whatever I want? Being an unchained id, unhinged, chained, whatever I'm trying to say, an id with no ego and superego.
Right.
And being what if a baby was in an adult's body? And that's, I think, where it is so fascinating. And I do think, I think it has interesting things to say about the sexual stuff that happens in this movie and the way that men take advantage of her and
agency.
But I like it so much more where it's this is a baby who's just I'm gonna do what I want. Don't tell me what to do.
And I think that's what works for me the best as well, is the middle 45 minutes to an hour of this film, from the moment we're introduced to Duncan Wedderburn to the moment she comes back when Godwin is dying, is all the best parts of the film for me. And I'm a little bit bummed that that's the majority of what was seen in the trailer, because some of the funniest stuff in this movie, even out of context, is still in the trailer, including when she slaps him and he says, ow. I'm really annoyed that that was in the trailer, because that's one of the best moments. And then when they're in Paris and he's standing under her balcony doing the Stella Bella thing from Streetcar, that's the highlight of the freaking trailer, and I'm so mad that it was in there. So this is a good advertisement to not watch trailers, so you don't see stuff, because that that moment I think would have hit me so much better, both in the theater and last night, if I hadn't known about it. You know what I mean?
I didn't know about that. I do love Ruffalo as that's a character you've never seen from Ruffalo. This villain, one of the most he would be the most hateable person in this movie had Christopher Abbott's character not shown up.
Correct. And that's the part of the movie that works for me the least, is all of a sudden we have a back 20 minutes where Christopher Abbott shows up and basically teaches her that everything she's done in her life, this isn't the person who she is. She's an awful person. And then she gets to turn him into a goat. which is, I don't know, for some reason that, like, that whole part of the movie just still didn't work for me on this rewatch, but I can't really put my finger on why, but I think part of it is that, like, you feel like you're getting this really great conclusion at the end when they're in the wedding chapel, and then you, and maybe this is intentional, but you get the rug pulled out from under you, because you feel like the movie is starting to wrap itself up when they, when she starts to marry Max, and they go to the chapel, and God walks her down the aisle, and you're getting ready for this, like, wonderful ending, and then all of a sudden, you know, record scratch. Again. Here's another 15 minutes of horribleness. You know, it's like,
Latanya, what do you think of the end?
I'm still kind of sit, like, processing it, honestly. I feel like the reason that the like Christopher Abbott being turned into a goat stuff works is because I am a person who has had a shitty boyfriend.
But you want to turn into a goat and make it.
I definitely wanted to turn it into a goat. And so just kind of the revenge fantasy of all of that is great. But I mean, I think ultimately with her, like, you know, finding her agency, because this is also a character who's had to be her own mother for the entirety of the film. Like, she has a father figure and she has men, lots of men in her life, but it's not until she starts to meet and hang around with women that she starts to develop some of, you know, some of the traits that, you know, are more feminist in leaning. Another interesting thing about Mary Shelley that I learned is that her mother, who passed away, I think 11 days after having her or something like that, wrote one of the first feminist texts ever.
Oh, wow.
So the idea of, like, a young Mary Shelley, because I think she was 18 when she wrote Frankenstein. So the idea of her, like, reading her mother's, like, feminist text and then writing this story about putting together a monster, like an 8-foot tall monster from different, like, butcher's parts, is so cool. And then turning that on its head and making that about a woman coming into her own agency and exploring her sexuality and, you know, becoming a sex worker and finding empowerment in that is really interesting. And I think that the introduction of the Christopher Abbott character is really just a way of saying, even when women find their power, there's still the patriarchy to contend with. There's still these men that are going to be there to try to put them in a literal cage.
Gotcha.
And so her being able to break free of all of that at the end is very empowering and kind of a huge statement that I think I'm still reckoning with.
And that at the end of the movie, like, it's, I think, like, just from a very, like, simple metaphor perspective, like, she's outside, right? She's at the house. She is at, but this is the first time I've ever seen the backyard of this house, right?
Right.
Like, she has been able, and she is the master of the house, right? She's studying to be a doctor. She's taken over, but, like, and then the Margaret Qualley character kind of is like this, like, almost I just think, like, I like that part, but I do agree with you, Brendan, that, like, the goat stuff is just, like, it's, like, weirdly simple to me a little bit. Like, I don't know, it's like, it's funny, like, it's a really funny, like, last image of this movie, and, like, it does kind of sum up the weirdness that, like, but I don't know, there's just something, there's something a little bit off on that, but I mean, there's also something off about everything in this movie.
Okay, here's a supposition. Does it work better if instead of this Christopher Abbott character who suddenly finds his wife, who is, you know, the original Bella who went into the river, does this work better if instead it's the Mark Ruffalo character who gets turned into a goat at the end?
What happens to him at the end? Do we even get any conclusion
Nothing. We have no idea. Duncan? He's still out there being horrible to people. So, yeah.
Maybe that's, I mean, I think that's more appropriate, to be honest.
Yeah. That gets seems away, like, that seems about right for that character. Like, he would just continue being a rake.
Yeah.
In ruining a different woman's life.
Yep.
Yeah. One thing that I know this was something that Olin messaged me separately about, and it was not in his feedback email, but it is a question, and I said I would ponder it while I was watching the movie, and I do not have an answer to it. And he said, how did they get from Marseille to Paris? Because they the boat drops them off.
It's a freaking fantasy.
I'm just.
It's a fantasy. It doesn't matter. She gets to Lisbon, and we're seeing steampunk trolleys and trains and things flying through the air. It's clearly set up as a fantasy world. We don't worry about Oz. We don't worry about Dorothy trotting around Oz and how she walked that many miles from Munchkin Land to the Wizard's Castle.
I think all the time about her poor feet because she was skipping that whole time.
Well, okay, so the part of that I left out was not just how did they get from, because I was so focused on not screwing up pronouncing Versailles, but so the boat drops them off there because they have no money, right?
Correct. Yeah, and it's the next port of call.
And it does seem like they've been together for a couple weeks. I think he says it's been a few weeks between, and I've looked on the map, Versailles and Paris are not close to each other. And I do think I wonder more, was there something that was cut out of this movie where they're, even if they just hitchhiked, right? There is a whole road trip adventure part of this where somehow they got from Marseille to Paris before and once they got to Paris, then she starts going to that whorehouse and I'm calling it a whorehouse. I probably not the best terminology, but that is such, the ladies, the house, I don't know what the hell they call it.
The house of ill repute.
There we go. Yes, she makes she starts making all this money, and then they have all this money, and she reveals that she had she had two sets of gloves on this whole time, right? She had a fanny pack of money on her,
right?
And so maybe they use that. It just feels like I do think yes. And my initial response to Olin, Brendan, was the same as you. I said it. That's what you're worried about. This was a fantasy with all this weird shit, them getting from one place to another. What you're worried about? But I just wondered if anybody had any ideas.
You and Andy Ryan using the term whorehouse on a podcast. I just like to think that it was just one of those happy little movie teleportations, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Right, well, travel by map, right? That's the terminology.
There's lots of travel by map in this film. I mean,
yeah.
They go from Lisbon to Alexandria to Marseille.
But they have money at that point. They have money and they get on the boat, right? The difference is she gets rid of all of his money. Yeah. She gives it away. And then they get thrown off the boat. But, I mean, it's also... it's a fan. I mean, I like how fantastical this movie is. This movie is not based in reality. This is a story about a woman whose dead body is resuscitated by putting her baby's brain in her body. So how did they do that? There's your question.
Yeah. Speaking of the themes of this film and sort of how we go from these different types of fantasy land. And I mentioned, Alexandria a second ago, how do we feel about the Gerard Carmichael character and the trip into Alexandria? It's a needed part of a character journey that a character, as they're growing, a child, as they're growing and learning about the world, the unfortunate reality is at some point they lose their innocence to the harshness of the world. They learn about death and injustice and, war and plague and famine and pestilence and all that horrible stuff. So, this is a very quick aside with the Gerard Carmichael character. We meet him. He's, has a very cynical POV, we're told, and has a very existential philosophy about him. A lot of fatalistic qualities. Basically, humanity is doomed and there's nothing we can do to help anyone. Nihilistic, I guess, call him. How do we feel about the Gerard Carmichael thing? It doesn't work for y'all. It worked for me better the first time than it did on last night's rewatch. And I think part of it is because it does feel like it kind of comes out of nowhere and is so sudden. But at the same time, maybe that's the point, because that's how, life doesn't work on a schedule. Tragedy can strike at any moment.
Tanya, I'll let you go first since you just watched it for the first time.
I think it worked for me just because I was happy to see him in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he has such a unique voice as well.
Mm-hmm.
That it was like, he kind of has an old timey voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that he's like a obviously a modern person. So it was interesting to see him in an old timey setting because it kind of started to match up with like his voice and mannerisms a little bit that he just has naturally. I also think that that one of the strongest acting moments for Emma Stone in this movie is when she discovers all of the bad things that are happening in this town and she mm-hmm. sees like the dead children and all of that like terrible like stuff. And she's just, you know, sobbing in his arms with like blood coming out of her mouth because she's like bitten him as yeah. well. Like, I think that that's kind of a showcase for Emma Stone. So I love pretty much everything that happens when they're on the ship as well. Like that's mm-hmm. that's when she makes her first friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love the scene when she meets her and when she meets John Carmichael and the older companion. I love mm-hmm. that moment so much. Yeah, yeah.
Harry Astley is his name, and
there you go.
I don't remember what that Swiney, I think, is Catherine Hunter. Is that the actress who plays the older woman on the? Yeah, Swiney.
No, that's not Catherine Hunter. Catherine Hunter is the.
Oh, madam. That's not. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That she's like the nurse. I think mm-hmm. I think it's Martha von Kurtzrock, I think, is the name of this character, I believe.
Mm.
So, or maybe it's Mrs. Prim. I don't remember.
No,
okay.
No.
To go back to that, like I wrote down a couple things in my notes for this. So the Gerard Carmichael character, I wrote down great vibes, wooden delivery. like I really like him as a presence in this movie, but the way that mm-hmm. he talks, and I think it's kind of what you were talking about, LaTanya, that like the way that he talks is so kind of old timey and stiff.
Yeah.
That like, It is like, I mean, there's so much in this movie that's off-putting and strange, so I don't mind it that one of the characters is like that, but it's like,
mm-hmm.
it's the most off wooden robotic performance in this movie for a movie about like robotic type thing. Like, you know, there's like scientific creations. So like, I like him. I really like his presence. I love that it's kind of like, this is Bella going to college and like
mm-hmm.
awakening to what's going on in the world. Right, but like she's learning, like it does remind me of like you know, somebody goes to college and like becomes woke to things that are going on in the world they didn't know.
Yeah, they're weird college friends who suddenly scouting reading philosophy all of a sudden. You know, yeah,
exactly, yeah. And so I like, and again, that's the stuff that I really like more than the like sexual awakening stuff, which I think like I like that as a part of this movie. I just don't like that like has become so much of what the second half of this movie is, but also like I think that's all the discourse of this movie is about everything sexualness. And if it was more about just like innocent person discovers the world for the first time, mm-hmm. I think that's just like there's like a little bit more that you can squeeze out of that. And also just one other thing on the ship, the boat where they do see like all of the people outside the boat, that like all the terrible things going on in the world, which mm-hmm. you can't, I mean, it's all so like fantastical, like everything looks so strange anyways, but I'd like that as like almost like you go on a cruise ship and you mm-hmm. pull up to some Caribbean island and this giant cruise ship is there. And then you look out and there's like homeless and poverty yeah. and like all this stuff where like this like opulence is coming in on this giant carnival cruise liner.
You don't give it a second thought because you're
right. You know, yeah. So I like that as like a comparison to that scene.
What else we want to talk about? Because we haven't really talked much about the McCandless character.
Candle.
Yeah, Mr. Candle. He's like sort of the like nice guy of the movie. Like
nice connection to last week.
Yeah.
To Joel from last week.
Played by Rami Youssef. I didn't think much of him the first time I saw this movie, but I was really taken by his performance last night on my second watch. I think like he does get pushed around a lot and sort of isn't sure what to do about the situation with Godwin because he admires Godwin and wants to work with him. And then he also like really does seem to care for Bella, but he's also like not doing any of the things to actually like protect her. He's letting her grow into being her own person. But I also like really like the end of the film where he's still there for her and doesn't judge her for, you know, all of her adventures after she gets back. Like, and that may be a little unrealistic is the only part of that, you know, like that this guy would just like be such a nice guy, you know.
I think it's easier to believe because it's played by Rami Youssef. He seems like such a nice person. I mean, they do have like the purest relationship in the whole movie, mm-hmm. Where you really get the idea that he legitimately loves her.
Yeah.
And wants, like, he doesn't necessarily just want her because of her body or her sexuality. Right. He wants her to go out and become a full person and discover life, which seems unrealistic because there are so many terrible characters in this movie.
Yeah, he intentionally like has that beat where he's like, well, I'm not like he knows how emotionally developed she is.
Right.
And so he's not going to take advantage of that. And everyone else she meets takes advantage of that way in some way or another after she leaves the castle or after mm-hmm. she leaves the house, you know? And so,
and like, I think even the god character like seems to really care for her.
Right.
I know he traps her in the house, right? But
right.
But
he also doesn't want Bella to like go through the pain that he suffered because of how he was made. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
and he lets her leave. Like when she asks to leave, he doesn't stop her. I mean, he does try to keep her in the house, which also like if this is an infant, right? Like. It's just the same way you would lock like your cabinet doors with an infant because you don't want your infant climbing out onto the roof and falling. I do think like from a fatherly perspective he cares for her. Mm-hmm. And when he realizes she's ready to like go out and experience the world, he is open to it. I think like the nice, like he is like such a the McCandless character is such like an opposite of a lot of the men that we meet. He is like the nicest character. The other person who I think is like seemingly very nice is the man that she meets when she's in the, what did you call it? Like the House of the Night in
Paris. House of Ill Repute.
House of Ill Repute in Paris.
House
yes.
of the Night.
Yeah. Cheese to Meet You man, where she tells
him
the joke.
Where they have the joke. Yeah. Cheese to Meet You. Yeah.
And he his laugh is just like I could listen to like an hour of that laugh where he's just like legitimately cracking up at this stupid cheese to meet you joke. I just love that man just because of that scene.
One of the Johns.
and going to that segment too, like we get shortly after that, I think we get the father who's in there his two sons that says like I want to teach my sons about sex, and
there's. I love the dichotomy of the two kids as they're sitting there watching, because there's like one who's studiously taking notes, who's younger, and then the older one who's just staring uncomfortably at the whole situation, like isn't sure what to make of any of it, just staring. I'm like, all right. I don't know which one of you is going to be better off from this experience.
I like it thematically connected to like a movie about discovery and awakening. Right. Like this is another way that kids are learning about their bodies and about others' bodies.
So the kid taking notes is a podcaster. The one just staring is not. Yeah.
There you go.
He's going to be best director one day.
Yeah. He's going to write a blog. God with a blog.
Well, I have a couple other things to talk about. Lizanne, is there anything on your list that we haven't hit on this movie?
No. I mean, like, I really did just watch this film.
Mm-hmm. That's good. It's good to give a reaction.
So, for me, it's just, like, it's one of those movies that you have to see more than once, I think.
For sure.
In order to take all of it in. I'm still a little bit gobsmacked by the whole thing. So I don't have any more on my list to discuss, but I'm happy to keep talking about it.
Well, I think I am always like team every movie should be watched twice. I say that all the time on this podcast. Like, it's you gotta rewatch movies because you get more out of them. It happens less frequently that I am lower on a movie on a rewatch than I was on the first watch. And I still really like it. I think I really like what it's attempting. I think I'm pretty sure it's my favorite Yorgos movie. But I do think like I can see some of the flaws. I think we have some like very interesting feedback just from perusing the emails. Yeah. Like you talk about like Latanya talked to earlier about like this movie's tearing people apart. Like this movie's tearing the feedback section apart as well.
Absolutely.
yeah. So but we haven't talked at all about the visuals. And I think we have to talk about the visuals, especially for Yorgos Lanthimos, which like his movies are all about like being provocative, yes, but also having crazy visuals. But I love how the visuals actually like work within the story of this movie.
Because they're not just like weird a pop-up for the sake of
they're not just weird for the sake of weird.
Right.
To me, the visuals are like what this baby is experiencing the world for the first time. And like this is how things look. This may not be how things actually are in this world, but this is how things look to Bella. And that's where like the fisheye lens and the black and white to color, like it actually adds depth to the story that is not just I'm gonna do weird visuals and fisheye lens like he does in all of his other movies.
Yeah, it's really so something I learned recently from going over and visiting my newfew for the first couple of weeks since he's been born.
Newfew.
So something I didn't know before is that when you start reading to a baby when they're only a few weeks old, you use black and white picture books because it's easier for them to focus their eyes on the images when it's black and white instead of starting them off right away with a colored picture book. And so my brother was like, yeah, you're supposed to like, so we read him like a couple of these picture books that have like black and white images and his eyes were like darting all over the place and looking at the pictures, but it's gonna like, only after the first couple of months can they start to really focus on color. And so that I didn't know that before. And so that's why I think I'm watching this movie last night was really, really interesting because that you say that, Zach, because we start this movie in black and white. That's how Bella is.
Well, we start in color. The very first scene is in color. But
But when she gets the new brain, we're starting this movie in black and white, the way an infant sees the world before their eyes are opened and adjust to the actual colors of the natural world. And to your point, kids' imaginations see the world in a more abstract scale a lot of times than the world actually is. And I think we get that all the way until the very end when she comes back to visit God as he's dying, and there's no more abstraction for the rest of the film.
And the color, when it comes in, is almost kind of jarring because you've gotten used to the black and white, but like the color saturation also changes because we have such light colors happening, like when she's in Portugal, for example. And then when she gets introduced again to the character who's her husband, like her in her past life, everything just gets way darker.
Yes.
As her life and what she's dealing with starts to get more and more dark.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also notice, like, speaking when you're speaking of that at the end when she's with Alfie and things get darker, the floor looks like it's blood covered. Like it's like this dark red.
So
tile.
Glossy. I was noticing that last night. Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah.
Like it's some fun foreshadowing, I think, that like we get the bloody floor and that's what we're gonna end up getting like 10 minutes later. But yeah, I like that kind of each segment has like its own visual feel to it, right? Like the Portugal is very like yellow, and then when we get the cruise ship, it's like this like CGI background, like this really like hyper real blue CGI background. The sky and the sea looks like very much like it's very like obviously fake looking. Even the boat looks like CGI when they show the externals of the boat.
Yeah.
Then we get to Paris and it's like snowy. And it's a little bit more muted. And then, like you said, the end is much more dark.
Yeah, so. I mean, this may come up later in connections, but there's it's almost like Yorgos Lanthimos like borrowed something out of the Wes Anderson playbook for the middle of this film. It's very Wes Anderson-y.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah. It is. Wes Anderson is another one where, like, his movies don't always work for me, especially the first time. The second time, because there's just so much going on. Like, I watched Henry Sugar this week, and in my review on Letterboxd, I said, like, no amount of listening to podcasts at 1.5x could prepare me for how fast everything is going in this
movie. Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Because they're just reading a book and acting
and
out.
It's
as
like
they're
talking so fast, and the visuals. So, it's just like, yeah, like, the Wes Anderson stuff, I really need, like, lots of times to see that. I also just want to call out the motor horse, which I loved both times, but I love that they have this like motor, like this like steampunk motor carriage that has a fake horse on the front. Both times I watch this movie, it cracks me up when it just like comes around the corner. And
that's a horse of a different color.
Well, it's a one horsepower, I believe, it looks like. And when they're in the back of the carriage, we get the first like hedonism from Bella where she wants, what does she want? Ice cream?
She wants ice cream. Yeah.
And she
throws a tantrum.
And I watched this the night after Emma Stone won the Oscar, and it's like she's an adult throwing a temper tantrum, and it's totally believable. And so I do think I think both performances are really, really good and so different, right? The Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone.
Lily Gladstone.
But I think like the level of difficulty for this role to not make it's like silly and like obscure, but it. Like the way she walks, like just the physical nature of this. I just think the level of difficulty is really, really hard. And so I understand her getting the I understand her getting the win. I mean,
especially
I think
to show the growth physicality of the growth over 2 hours. And you get it. Like you don't I was never taken out of that growth from her. No, it all made sense to me. Like,
you know.
The
you always felt like this was somebody discovering these things and experiencing these things for the first time. I wrote this down as my one last thing, but I'm just going to talk about it now. There's a line earlier that McCandless says about her hair grows like an inch every couple days or something. And I noticed that in the movie, her hair does get longer. Yeah. Like it starts a lot shorter. And like by the end of the movie, on the ground. Like it's just like that kind of stuff. That's just like. Like, I didn't notice that the first time, but her hair actually does get longer. All right. Anybody have anything else? I mean, I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about with feedback.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot to talk about as we go through the feedback, I think. So.
All right. Cool. So box office, just going back to December. So this movie premiered at Venice in the summer of 2023. Had a limited release in December and opened at number 17. It then rose up to number 9 the following week, expanded to 800 theaters in week 3, which I think is the one that you pulled the box office for, Brendan.
Yep, it is. It looks
I saw this movie in January, I remember. So this was way after. Brendan, do you remember when you saw this movie?
I believe I saw it. I went to see it at East Street either the week before Christmas or the week after Christmas. I don't remember exactly. You could probably look at my Letterboxd.
Probably. So this is December 8th. December 8th is the week that you pulled. So this is when it was in 9. So I'll go a couple to around the time when you watched it, Brendan, to get the box office. But Boy and the Heron was number 1 at the.
That makes sense.
The week of this is Christmas week, and this is when Poor Things raises up to it's number 11, but it's in the most theaters at this point. Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom was number 1 at the box office that week.
Nice.
That was the week he came out. Also, Anyone But You came out that week, as did Iron Claw. So. 3 pretty big movies. I guess this is Christmas weekend, so it's a pretty big movie release weekend.
Saturday, December 16th is when I saw it. So there you go.
Nice. Okay, so before it was wide. Poor Things is number 11. One spot ahead of Poor Things. Also one spot ahead of Poor Things on my top 2023 movies list. Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, what I like about this is like now that it's won a couple of Oscars, it's still in theaters and it's continuing to grow, even though it's on streaming. The box office is still strong. For this.
Okay, nice.
People want to see this movie in theaters.
I do think this movie in theaters hits a lot different. Like at home, because it's so weird, I think it's very easy to like let yourself be released from the weirdness of this. But when you're in theaters, like there were people in my theater that laughed, and
there were people in the theater that I felt like were giving me permission to laugh as I was laughing. You know what I mean?
There are a lot of very funny lines and like funny like absurd things that happen in this. God at one point says, I'm having port for breakfast. It is delicious. And I just like, when he's like laying on the ground, it kind of reminded me of a scene from a movie that is on my list. I will say. Latana, do you have a number one Yorgos movie? Do you have a favorite Yorgos movie?
Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Nice. Same as me. Okay.
I love any movie where Barry Keoghan is a weird little dude.
He's such a weird little dude. Do I have a movie for you then?
Yeah. Have you seen Saltburn yet, Latanya?
Of course I've seen Saltburn, like, so many times.
Oh, shit.
Saltburn number 20 at the box office. Yeah, the week of this movie. Killing of a Sacred Deer, actually not my favorite. I think this is my favorite, but this Killing of a Sacred Deer is my second favorite after this.
The favorite is my favorite.
There you go.
Yeah, it's the favorite is my favorite. I absolutely adored the favorite. So.
Yeah, nice. It is really all good. Right.
Well, let's get to, speaking of favorite, let's get to feedback and hear what we have to say from people. All right, so kick things off with the winner of the 2024, Brendan's 2024 Oscar Predictions Contest, Travis Payne.
Congratulations to Travis Payne on your win. It was quite impressive. He got 20 out of 23 predictions correct.
I can't believe you don't call this person T-Pain. That's all
I do, but I, you know.
Yes. He must have the spoilers. Brennan, you and I tied on that.
Yes, we did. Correct. Yes, all right, we next did. Year, very tiebreaker. An impressive tie. Yes.
Yeah. Next year, add a tiebreaker for like what time does the Oscars end, or like,
or you and I just should have had a side bet about. You know.
Should have had a side bet. Yes. Yeah. Or like who messes up the most, and then I can pick Al Pacino and hope he does it again next year.
Which director gets the most cutaways? It's going to be Spielberg. You know.
My eyes are seeing Travis.
My eyes are seeing Oppenheimer.
My eyes.
I don't know what they were thinking. What do you think Al Pacino is going to do?
I said this on an earlier podcast today, but yeah. I really do think that the Oscars need to stop having the elder statespeople of Hollywood presenting these big awards. Something always goes wrong, and they're like, "What? I don't understand.
I mean, like, literally, when everybody started rushing the stage, he goes, "What is going on?"
Yeah.
Poor Al Pacino. What is happening?
I wish to go back to the Oscars. I wish we got more clips of the acting performances.
I think I enjoyed the heartfelt message.
Yeah, but I wanted to see, like, why is this person nominated? And, like, what is the clip that they were choosing as, like, this person's Oscar reel for, like, what would they have picked from this movie? Like, what scene from this movie would they pick for Emma Stone?
I know which one they would use for Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of the Fall, which is, you know, wait, can you come in here with your opinion and try to tell me who Sandra Hüller was?
Your favorite line.
Yeah, it's the only line, yeah. It's the only Brennan's line, and I love it.
Your number one line from 2023. Yeah. All right, really Travis Payne, congratulations on your win. All right, so Travis says, I thought the movie was visually stunning. I fully enjoyed all the acting performances, particularly Ruffalo, Redemption from last week, and Stone. The second half of the movie was fantastic. Big, however, coming.
Uh-oh.
I could barely get through the first hour of the movie. I found it dragging on and on and on. 2.5 stars.
Oh, no.
Travis, all the opposite of me. I prefer the first half to the second half.
See, I think of this movie in thirds rather than halves. So.
That's okay. Weird.
Yeah.
So what do you think of, like, the black and white, then everything before they get back, and then when they get back?
Yeah, and then the back end, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
I will say that I was watching this movie last night, and I looked at the runtime, and there was still an hour and 22 minutes left, and I was like, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do think that the movie is a little overly long. Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
Yeah.
That, and I think when you're in the theater, you're just sitting in it, and like, right, it's, yeah. I just think, like, for something that is this, like, provocative and weird, like, I think it makes it a little bit like you get to escape from that. I think, like, Zone of Interest, a very different movie, but I also think, like, Zone of Interest is a movie that I think is much different at home than in the theaters, where you're, like, really stuck, like, sitting in this torment that you're watching.
But I mean, Zone of Interest is also only an hour and 45 minutes, so that's...
Not from a runtime perspective, but from a like, experience perspective.
Robbie writes in and says, I've seen this movie twice now, and I enjoyed it more on a second watch than on my first. I thought the movie dragged at some points, especially during the boat segment, but overall, I enjoyed it a lot. Emma Stone's performance was amazing in this, but I think she should finish second in Best Actress to Lily Gladstone in this year's Oscars. 4 stars overall from Robbie. This was sent in before the Oscars. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of controversy, you know, I mean, not major controversy, but still ongoing debate about, you know, Emma Stone's win versus Lily Gladstone. They split almost every award ceremony, you know, like between, you know, middle of last year and now, between who got Best Actress. So it really was like a neck and neck race between the two. I think I would need to rewatch Killers of the Flower Moon, but I do think that, like, you can't say that Emma Stone didn't deserve to win.
I just think that it's so hilarious how much Emma Stone clearly did not want to win.
Oh yeah, the look on her face is incredible. She's like, oh no.
There are a lot of TikToks that put like music behind it. And it was just like the dun dun dun.
Yeah. Kind of,
like she was not excited about getting up.
She didn't want it. Yeah.
What do you have to do?
Yeah. You know? It's just like, so, I mean, it's like these two performances are like a rock concert and like a like slow moving like jazz or classical song. Like they're just so different than each other. Really, I mean, it's really hard to compare them. I don't feel like I'm like the best person at comparing acting performances. Like a lot of people say that Greta Lee should have been nominated. I think like she's fine. Like I don't think like she didn't, her performance wasn't one that I think was like one of the best of the year, but I don't feel like I have a great read on that, to be honest. So,
well, Zach, you're fired.
I know.
I will be taking over.
There we go. Sweet. That's a couple hours a week. I get back now. That's perfect.
Yeah. Just in time for March Madness.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. You could take, take over for March for me. All right. Well, previously mentioned Olin, he has a feedback email, and it's not as long as I was expecting.
Nope.
He said, that was a load of inspired, insipid, thank you, insipid, dull rubbish. At least watching on Disney Plus, we could comment on the rubbishness of it, rather than being all polite society in the cinema, that is him and his wife when they watch it together. The score as well, how did that get a nomination? Definitely hope that won't have won on Sunday. Congratulations, Olin, it did not win on Sunday. Willem Sadie's Scottish accent was quite decent, at least. Don't know what accent Ruffalo was attempting. 2 out of 5 stars from Olin.
Yeah, I think he means Willem Dafoe, but yeah.
That's what I thought, but I didn't know
if Sadie was...
Yeah, 2 out of 5. The score. We didn't talk about the score. I did not like the score in The Lobster. That is one of the things I remember the most from that movie, is hating the score. I don't know if it is the same composer. Lutani, what did you think of the score in Poor Things?
I thought that it was interesting. Like, it's not really my cup of tea. It's more like, you know, ambient noise. With like the song that's like the big dance number song.
Yeah.
I was just like, how do you even choreograph?
I love that dance
to this.
Yeah.
Like, what's happening?
It actually reminded me a lot of the score of a similar film to this, Young Frankenstein, which we did a couple years ago on the pod, where it's playing different beats of like classical music, where they would use these like wild strings, you know, to like emphasize beats. And I thought that was like, I thought it worked because it was playing on those types of movies.
Because it's all like, it's like all the score is like, sounds like an untuned piano, right? And we see her at a piano earlier in the movie. And I do think the score throughout the movie, much like the colors and the visuals, change as she's growing and learning. Mm-hmm. And I think like it adds to just like the off-kilterness. Like also like her riding that giant bicycle. Like just like, there's just weird off-putting things in this movie. So I think like the score is off-putting. And Latanya, you just said like, it's not really my thing. I don't think the score is anybody's thing. I think intentionally so, it's not anybody's thing.
That's
It's kind of, Emma Stone has a habit of working in movies that have these like wild scores to them, like this one. Birdman comes to mind as a movie that I was just like, wow, the music in this movie is unlike anything that I've ever heard in a movie before. And obviously The Favorite is another one. Just, you know, Yorgos is a weird dude.
Him and Who's the guy that did The Northman? Eggers.
Robert Eggers.
Yeah, Robert Eggers. He and Robert Eggers, I feel like, have to be, like, best friends. With how weird they like to get.
Like, I feel like, I feel like we could be doing The Lighthouse next week.
You're fond of the lobster, aren't you?
So this was, that's choreography, right? Like, hang on, I was going to pull the composer. It is Jerskin Fendricks, and this is Jerskin Fendricks' first movie. He kind of looks like Stephen Fishback in his in his Letterboxd picture, like a bearded, more hipster Stephen Fishback.
Incredible! I love it.
Yes, he is also scoring the next Yorgos movie that is set to come out, I think, this year. It's called Kinds of Kindness, and I've heard about this, and it sounds very interesting.
Oh yeah.
Tells three separate stories with cast playing different characters in each. We've got Emma Stone, Jesse Plemons, Hong Chau, Willem Dafoe, Margaret Qualley, all going to be in. And Joel Alwyn, which that name sounds familiar, but I don't
know. He dated Taylor Swift.
Oh.
Okay.
Interesting.
All right. So we have to pick a side then.
Yeah. Well, maybe that composer was coached really well in how to conduct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or maybe he's a terrible composer, and Yorgos is like, oh, this is perfect. Yeah, it's terrible music for my movie. It's exactly what it is.
Perfect. Oh, my God.
In terms of the accents, I mean, I
don't really bother me.
Everybody was talking weird in this movie.
Whatever Ruffalo was doing was incredible. I loved it. It was so weird. It was so weird. I loved it. He was trying something different, and I was here for it.
It's just very in keeping with the fact that Americans are so terrible at doing accents.
Yeah, he was trying to do a bad European accent. Like, he was doing the, like,
it's off-putting, just like his character. Yeah, and then you see Margot Robbie, who's Australian, and she does, like, you can't even tell in her, you know, you don't hear an Australian accent.
Yeah, I don't know why everybody's so good at doing American accents.
Whatever. I'd love to know, like, I mean, well, you don't do Tanya, you do debate, which is not really dialect stuff, but it is like a speaking thing. And I would be curious about, like, dialect coaches and, like, why is it that people can do American accents so easily?
Yeah, I'd like to say it has something to do with uvular plosives, but who knows?
There you go. I'll take it.
Sure, we'll go with that. All right. Speaking of uvular implosives, Megan the Librarian writes in. Megan the Librarian writes in and says, my Letterboxd review is too long to read on the podcast. In brief, I found this movie thought-provoking, but not really in a good way, because the more I thought about it, the less coherent it seemed. I definitely do not believe this should be called a feminist story. It's also weird. For the sake of being weird, not really my thing. 2.5 stars. So, Zach, what do you think about it not being a feminist story? I'm joking. I'm joking. LT, your thoughts, please.
This is a scene right out of American Fiction, I feel like.
I can understand that. I can, because, you know, it is off-putting at the very, like, the premise is very off-putting.
For sure.
To think of taking a baby's brain and putting it into a woman's body and then just seeing what happens is a little weird. But I think it's the, you know, finding your power through sex work, which is like a very modern kind of like feminist thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like using the master's tools to kind of dismantle the house. Kind of feminism, sure. It is, I think, that it is about like finding oneself and claiming one's power in that way. So I think, you know, and they set out for it to be a feminist tale mm-hmm. as well.
I will say that Megan's review on Letterboxd, I read it this weekend and it's got it already. And so it is too long to read on the podcast. I just checked it. It's 879 words.
A lot of words.
I just ran it through a word counter. So, but
we can link to that.
And I see a typo in here too, Megan.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think people follow Megan Librarian on Letterboxd. So read her review, even if you love this movie or if you hate this movie. I think it's like her review is super thought provoking, really well written, 879 words, only one typo. So,
Thank you,
good stuff for Megan Delivery. Only because when I put it in the word count,
wow, Zach. So misogynistic.
Wow.
Pointing out
that's
the
a pretty good record, though.
In a woman's thought-provoking, well-written review, you have to point out the one typo. What a dick.
Who amongst us has not had a typo in their writing before?
So, I mean, the most perfect stuff in every way.
And 2.5 stars from her. So
correct, yes.
I mean, some people say fan favorite Magnum Librarian.
This movie is either going to get all the stars or people are going to be like, I didn't get it. I don't understand mm-hmm. why it's a thing.
Well, where Ron picks us up from the low 2 and 2.5 stars we've just had, Ron says, the mind of Yorgos Lanthimos is utterly deranged, but this time in a mostly beautiful way. One of the best movies ever for sets, costumes, and prosthetics. Utterly stunning. 4 stars.
Incredible. There you go. Mm-hmm. Boom.
Great. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how I'm often like, how do artists create these things? And I think like, how did he think like, how did he think of just like the way this movie looks? It's very impressive.
It's the same way that I'm like fascinated, but never would want to be inside the mind of Wes Anderson. I don't want to be inside the mind of Yorgos Lanthimos, but in the same way Bella says that the file on how God removed her brain and put it into the brain of the baby's brain and put it into hers is quite fascinating. I find him quite fascinating. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah.
Jim Crumley writes it and says, Poor Things is thought-provoking. There's another thought-provoking, but I'm not sure that that is good. It evokes a wide range of reactions. At times it seemed good and other times it seemed like trash. While it is a good movie to have on a list of Best Picture nominees, I think that the Academy dodged a bullet in it not winning. It seems unlikely to age well, and what a depressing ending. Emma Stone's performance was great. Oscar bait. Oh, sorry, was great. Oscar bait. 3 stars and no hero of the movie from Jacob.
No hero of the movie. Not even Emma Stone.
Not anyone. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It'll be interesting to see how this ages. I also like Professor Jim telling us that being thought provoking is not a good thing. Okay, Jim.
I don't like thinking, so yeah. I agree.
Yeah,
it hurts my head.
Yeah. Speaking of thinking, Brendan, for your calculations, I did happen to add another review at the bottom. I don't know if you saw it.
Oh boy.
So you might want to update that while I'm yes. I will read the next 2 because the next one is short. So the next one is first time, long time, Joey Braga, and a new fan of the films. He's gotten very into movies recently, and he said, "Poor Things, 4 stars. Keep killing it, gentlemen."
There you go. Oh, thanks. And LT, thanks, keep killing it.
Gentlemen and ladies. and hopefully, he just means like in the metaphorical sense, not like actually killing anything.
I don't know. I mean, I could go for a good chloroforming. How about you?
That's true. There's a lot of chloroform in this movie.
There's a lot of chloroform.
I also love the like old timey doctor stuff where they're like in like a stadium doing medical procedures. Mm-hmm. Like,
It
reminds me of a movie that's on my list, but also reminds me of The Nick, which I watched one episode of.
It's Clive Owen, right?
Yep. Yes, and I think it's probably good that we don't do medical procedures like that anymore. I guess this was like a class more than a medical procedure, but I like the way that looks.
I'm just happy the surgeon started washing their hands.
Oh my god,
I remember like during COVID people talked about how that was like heretic to like suggest that you should wash your hands back in the day. I don't know, I think about that often. All right, Alex O, he says, this movie is great. I totally understand most of the criticisms of it, and I went into a rewatch expecting to like it less, but it held up just as well for me as when I saw it in theaters. It's not quite perfect for me, but is by far my favorite movie of 2023, only as Across the Spider-Verse really comes close. Across the Spider-Verse is another movie where I'm like, how did they do that? Like, me. It's like an just artist
visually,
perspective.
Like, it's incredible.
How did they do that? Yeah.
Yep. Remember when they said that the next Spider-Verse was going to come out in February of 2024.
Yeah, and then everybody found out how they treat their animators. And they're like, oh, no, it's going to be 6
No, there's no way that's happening. No way.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like Across the Spider-Verse, but I also really am burnt out on AI villains. And we got an AI villain in that, so I didn't like that. All right, going back to Alex's email. Emma Stone rightfully won the Best Actress Award for Bella. She's incredible in this. Mark Ruffalo gives one of his best performances, and other members of the cast, like Jared Carmichael, Catherine Hunter, fresh on her role as Edie Karn in Andor. Oh, she was
She's
in...
so good, yeah.
As Edie I did Karn. Not remember she was...
Karn! Yeah. It's Karn! Karn.
There we go. And Hannah Shigulia, all really shine. I could go on and on about how much I enjoyed this movie, and I have on the There Will Be Pod 2023 movie bracket for anyone interested. Yes, Alex, I was on the There Will Be Pod movie bracket. We're already linking to too much stuff, but you can search for that. There Will Be Pod movie bracket. You can listen to him, Jim, and Sammy Chester talk about movies. Alex continues, but long story short, Poor Things cements its place as my second favorite Yorgos film. More on that in the latter suggestions, and it is a 4.75 from Alex. Wow. So he's going to the... It's going to the quarter mark.
Minuscule. There you go. I like it.
All right.
Your brother wrote in. Do you
guys want to guess what his favorite is? Well, you already know.
I think he just said it. I already know.
No, he said it's in the ladder suggestions.
Yeah, I already know. You already said it. You already said what his favorite is.
Oh, okay. Ha. Huh. There we go. Makes sense.
See, jokes.
There we go. Yep. You just have to explain it, and then I got it.
Cheese to meet you.
Jeez. Great joke. All right. Brennan's head.
Your brother Aaron writes in and says, Yorgos Lanthimos continues to deliver, and while Emma Stone is obviously great, Mark Ruffalo and Christopher Abbott, one of my favorite working actors, were the highlights along with the cinematography. 5 stars from your brother Aaron. I'd get curious because I think he has like pretty much every Yorgos is a 5-star film for him. So I'm curious his ranking is. Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, I do not know what his ranking is. He did take my mom to The Favorite once upon a time, and she was not a fan. although at least he didn't take her to this. I think this would be much worse. My thing with Christopher Abbott is he just looks so much like Jon Snow to me. I always think that it's, what's his face? Jon Snow, whoever that is.
I can't think of his name.
Kit Harington. Yeah.
Now I'm just picturing your mom, like, gasping at Rachel Weisz getting her eyes shot down.
Right, yes. Talk about provocative. That was a provocative choice.
Oh, man.
All right. And then late entrant into the feedback, not for the first time, but... Laura Royden, she sent a bunch of messages in the 32 Fans Movies group that I tried to pull together. She linked to a Vulture article that I will put it. I have not read it, but she said this article kind of sums up her feelings. So I will put that article into the show notes. And the headline is Poor Things the best we can do for female sexuality? And then I reached my article limit. On screen is the word after that. And Laura says, I don't necessarily have a male gaze problem with Poor Things. It's more that I just don't think it's a particularly interesting message. And I'm very tired of stories that are like, this is all about how men want to have sex with women and they're bad, but it's empowering, you see. And in my opinion, the case for it being subversive and empowering is sort of undermined by 2 hours of sex scenes. In the Vulture article that she posts a quote from that, there is a corroded spirit to the story, like it intermittently possessed by an edgelord who's unaware most women menstruate and have early wave white feminism and an early wave white feminist who believes having sex is the most empowering thing a woman can do. And then this back to Laura's comment, she said, although I do not think including menstrual blood would have improved the movie, the male gaze discourse feels like a distraction from the point, though, because it traps us in weird identity politics / choice feminism-esque idea of any movie directed, written, produced by a woman is feminist, which is nuts and obviously wrong. 2 stars from Lawrence.
That's true. Now, male gaze, G-A-Z-E, not to be confused with G-A-Y-S.
Indeed.
I love that.
Yes, G-A-Z-E, yes.
I mean, that totally makes sense. Like, it is... A majority of the quote-unquote feminist things that we see nowadays are very white feminist things. There's not a ton of intersectionality or, like, modern feminism happening. So I completely identify and understand that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I mean, you know, this, her feedback, it's like just not a perspective that I come to this movie from. Same with Megan the Librarian's perspective, like her mm-hmm. like her feedback. That's why, like, I really liked what she wrote on Letterboxd, because it just made me think about this movie in ways that just did not, it's like blind spots for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, like, that's why I wanted to include that, even though it was like kind of a few comments I sort of chopped and pasted together. But I think it's really good stuff to think about. So.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. What does that give us for an average from listeners, Brendan?
That is a 3.375 from the listeners, so not too shabby. It's like right above our middle average. So
we hit everything from 2 to 4.5, I think.
Exactly.
2 to 4.75.
Yeah, no, and a couple of fives. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah.
Cool.
LT, okay. Why don't you go first with your final review and rating?
My final review is that this is a visual treat for the eyes, with, you know, a message, maybe not the most like progressive message, but definitely a message in there. And I enjoy things that are weird for the sake of being weird. Like I'm a Yorgos mm-hmm. fan. One of my favorite tweets that I saw today was, Amy Adams, if you're in line for the Yorgos Lanthimos movie role, please stay in line. yes, because he has a habit of winning best actress for the people in his movies.
Right.
And so, this is another fantastic entry in what is going to end up being, I think, a pretty storied but odd career for a filmmaker.
Yeah.
So I think I would probably give this movie. Are we allowed to do it by tenths? Like, how does it work? I can't remember.
Quarters
you can
or
do
halves.
Whatever you want.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think 3.5 is good.
3.5.
Yeah.
Is it what? I'm sorry.
Is good.
3.5
is a good rate.
3.5. You got it.
Yeah.
You can go high, you can go more decimals if you want. I don't have a problem with it, especially if it's gonna be high rate. I'll go next. So this was a 5 the first time I saw it. I think I was just like so surprised, because I don't normally love Yorgos movies, because I don't like weird for the sake of weird. I like weird for the sake of purpose, which I do feel like this has. I think this movie is like super provocative and like it's his most accessible movie, I think. Maybe Killing the Sacred Deer is also as successful as this, but like The Lobster and The Favorite are not, and Dogtooth especially, not very accessible to me. And there's just a lot that I loved on the first. So it's hard, because like my initial review was 5 stars, but I'm lower. I don't get the warm fuzzies from this that I thought I did. So I'm going to give it 4.5.
You think Killing of the Sacred Deer is more accessible than The Favorite?
It's been a long time since I've seen it. But I feel like that's more of just like a whole.
So you're sticking with your.
I don't know. It's been a while. I
okay. Gotcha.
4.5. Yeah. I need to revisit Killing Sacred Deer maybe next week.
Okay. That was one that I found really hard to stomach, but maybe I need to revisit it. But it was very Killing of a Sacred Deer. I thought was really hard to get into. And I thought The Favorite was like top to bottom, just like so successful at what it was trying to do.
Yeah.
But as far as this movie goes, I'm in a similar boat than you, where you are, Zach. I gave this movie a 4.5 after I left it. And to actually go back to my initial review, what I said in my original review was I had a really great time, but I thought it was a little too long. And then I came back and edited my review about a week later after I saw it back in December, because I realized every time I talked to anyone else about this film, I realized that I enjoyed it much more than I gave it credit for when I was talking to other people about it. And I would say that the same thing applies to this conversation that we've had today. Like, talking about the things that really worked in this film and some of the things that didn't added to the, like, amplifying the things that I think that this film does really, really successfully. And so I'm going to stick with my 4.5. I don't think it's a perfect movie. I understand all the criticisms. I don't think it's a bad movie. I don't think that it deserves, you know, to be knocked down at all from me. I'm going to stick with my 4.5. So nice. There we go. So that's going to give us an average of 3.97, which is going to be a 4 on Letterboxd. So there you go.
All right. It all works out.
Yep.
There we go. Yeah. I think, like, if nothing else, this is an interesting one to talk about.
For sure.
And, like, to get different perspectives on. Because I think, like, there's not very many movies that come out with so many people having different perspectives about it.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hero of the movie. Tom, you got a hero of the movie?
Yeah, Bella. Right? Nice. Like, Bella Baxter. She's got the alliterative name, you know?
It's true. Baxter, you know I don't speak Spanish.
Good one.
Brendan, how about you?
I'm going to give it to Emma Stone. I think she really does. I mean, she won the Oscar, and I think deservedly so. I don't think that this movie works without her performance. I think that under the guise of any other actress, this may not have worked as well. And especially with what you said, LT, about her being heavily involved as a producer and sort of helping steer the vision of the movie, I think that you can see that. And I think that only comes from having an actress leading your film that the director really trusts. And he obviously trusts Emma Stone, you know, and they, you know, I'm going to give it to Emma.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to pick somebody different just for the sake of things. But I do think, like, Emma Stone, Bella Baxter, really strong performance in this. I am going to give it to Willem Dafoe because I just I really like that performance. I think we haven't talked too much about him, but I think, like, he's got a lot of trauma and sadness behind him, that character. And when he talks about his father and, like, the thing his father did with the fingers and, like, the way his father experimented on him. Mm-hmm. And I do think, like, I like this, the wedding scene where he's giving her away, like, he does really care about Bella. It's a little bit, you know, when he's talking about Felicity, which I had to look up her name, the Margaret Qualley character, like, we don't get much of, like, she's almost like the child that disappoints him a little bit. So I think, like, that's, I don't know.
They,
I just think
they could have made him much more of a mad scientist, and I'm glad that they didn't. They gave him an amount of empathy that I really appreciated. Yeah. For sure.
All right.
What else?
Connections. So I think we can quickly go through connections. We've talked a lot about them. I think, like, the nice guy thing that you mentioned, Brendan. So there's connections to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which we watched last week.
It's like Ruffalo and
Eternal Sunshine.
Sorry.
Have I seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that movie. I haven't seen it for a little while though. So it'll be good to revisit.
Yeah. It's almost like Ruffalo switched spots with the Elijah Wood character in this movie, where he's doing all of the, like, gaslighty, creepy things that Elijah Wood's character was doing in Eternal Sunshine, you know, to the Kate Winslet character.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it's so they're like, it's a role reversal for Ruffalo. So that like adds to the connection from last week, because Ruffalo was the nice guy. Ruffalo was in the McCandles role last week, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have the mapping of the human brain, which I also wrote down as the title connection. Although I thought that we could change it to marking the human brain because of Mark Ruffalo. Oh,
I like that. Mm-hmm. Marking the human brain. I think that's a good title connection. I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I also wrote down last week, I talked a little bit about how Eternal Sunshine had, like, a Terry Gilliam aesthetic to it.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of this that also looks like Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah, for Brazil
and stuff. That's true.
Oh, yeah, because didn't he do that the one version of Baron von Munchausen as well? And there's a lot of Baron von Munchausen in this movie.
Yeah, that's very true.
I've not seen that movie, but I believe you. Yeah. All right. Mark Ruffalo, welcome to the Five Timers Club.
Hey. Let's get him a jacket.
We always like to recognize when somebody reaches the Five Timers Club. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. He was also in Shutter Island.
Yep.
Collateral.
Yep.
And Brendan, can you remember the last one? I have it up. Do you remember the fifth one? No. I feel like this movie is often forgotten that we did on this podcast.
Oh, Brothers Bloom. He was our Bloom.
Brothers Bloom, which I think actually has a lot of connections to this, because it's like Ruffalo trancing around Europe.
Yep, absolutely. Trancing? So whatever. Train sync.
Yeah. Train sync. He's probably in a trance in that movie as well.
He probably is in a trance. Probably. Actually.
Yeah. All right. So title connection, marking the human brain is what you said.
Yep, marking the human brain.
All right. What about connections to other movies? I have one connection to other movies we've done this year.
Yeah, I wrote down something. This is great. Margaret Qualley was all silence. Yeah.
Yeah. Margaret Qualley was in The Nice Guys.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, she was the girl who gets kidnapped. The girl. Yeah. The girl that gets kidnapped. The daughter.
Yeah.
Also connection to Chinatown. When she does the I'm my own daughter mother thing.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah.
like the reveal of Chinatown.
Yeah, I was gonna say you don't need to say more, but yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Also Bad Marriage, toxic marriage.
Toxic relationship between a father and a daughter.
Nice. All right. And Eternal Sunshine, just to go back to that, is about to hit its 20-year anniversary. So if you need a reason to watch it, LT, you can watch it.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Definitely should. All right.
Movie map.
Wizard of Oz was the one that hit me, especially when she gets to Lisbon and she's walking around Lisbon, and it reminded me a lot of like Dorothy discovering Munchkin Land, and yeah.
I think that's so, a really good.
We have the black and white to color. Yeah, it's a lot of Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know the subtext becomes text in Poor Things that Wizard of Oz is doing.
Yeah.
You know.
So these are just the movies that we're reminded of.
Yeah, that right? we've done before. Yeah,
from last year. So this is the one from last year.
Got
it. Yeah.
Is there anything that we did last year that it comes to mind from this movie for you, LaTanya?
No.
That's okay. I had somebody to fill left out. That's all. I will also throw Titanic on there as a movie map.
Yeah, because of the ship.
They're on a boat.
Definitely, yeah. They are on a boat.
I also reminded of, especially the wedding stuff and, like, the interruption of the wedding by the husband, Kill Bill.
He's got big Billy Zane energy in this. He could have been played by Billy Zane.
True, yeah.
Not enough assholes played by Billy Zane these
Definitely
days.
Definitely not. Stay out of this, Billy Zane. We don't want you to get hurt.
Nice. All right.
Not enough people quote Billy Zane and Zoolander.
Zoolander?
I forget he's in Zoolander.
Yeah. Stay out of this, Billy. All right. Anyway.
Anyways. All right. One last thing.
No, I'm good. I don't have one last thing.
All right.
Anyone else?
LT, you got a one last thing?
No, I don't think I do.
We didn't really mention that this was based on a book released in 1992. We should shout that out. I don't know if people have read the book. I don't know how different this is from the book, but yeah, this is based on a book. So there you go. Yet another movie based on a book that we've done on this podcast. So there you go.
Nice. All right. Well, I have one last thing, but I feel like it's a little bit heavy for this movie. So I feel like especially in like the political climate that we're in right now, with abortion rights being taken away and restricted, the concept this movie is built on, that a fetus is taken out of somebody's body and turned into a human, like, it just strikes me as like very strange. I don't know, like very provocative, I guess, is the word I would use. Like the rest of this movie, and I think like especially right now, a key part of this movie is feels loaded.
Yeah.
Kind of a head.
And she's very pregnant too when she
she is very pregnant when she kills herself. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a I guess something to think about on this movie. I guess we don't have to have a response.
Bad note.
Yeah. I also like the motor horse. I'll mention that one again. just to turn the motor horse up a little bit.
Thank you for bringing it back to the motor horse. As all things should be.
I like the chicken pig.
Chicken pig is great, yeah.
Oh, what did they call it? Wasn't it like Chog that they call it? Because it's the chicken dog, the too. Yeah.
I don't know if it's good.
Very like Island of Dr. Moreau, that stuff.
Yes, well, that could be on somebody's list. So,
All right. Well, should we chog along to figure out what we're going to be watching next week?
Absolutely. Chog-a-chog-a-chog-a-chog-a-choo-choo.
Also, I don't know if I said it, but this was my pick from last week. So this is the only time it's come up was last week on the Tunnel of Sunshine. So, point for me. All right. Kick things off Once we do pick our movie for next week, send your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the movie, number 220, that we're going to be watching next week, and what we should watch next. All right. And I'll kick things off with Travis Payne, T-Pain himself. For next week, I suggest Emma Stone's Other, by the time you read this, Oscar-winning performance, La La Land.
La La Land.
Yes. Yep. I did laugh that the envelope for her Poor Things performance had her name much bigger than her La La Land one did, because that was like the basis of the Moonlight.
Yeah. And then Jimmy Kimmel made the joke too after she got off the stage. She was like, make sure that you check the envelope. That's very funny.
All right, Robbie has the favorite, Yorgos and Emma Stone, and La La Land for Emma Stone.
Yep.
Olin has Belle du Jour. Catherine Deneuve film based around French brothels. Brothel. I think that would have been a better word for me to use than whorehouse earlier. Norma Rae, 1979 film, focuses around women organizing under a leftist basis and pushing their sexual liberty. Oscar-winning performance by Sally Field. Was Sally Field one of the presenters on Sunday?
She was.
I don't remember.
She was one of the presenters.
I think she was.
Yeah.
I was mostly focused on Mary Steenburgen. I was like, oh, there's Mary. I love her. All right. And finally, Olin taking one that I thought of as well. 13 Going on 30, fantastic comedy with Mark Ruffalo as he gets close to a child's mind in an adult body. I was thinking about Big, 13 Going, like that kind of format of movie of like a child in an adult's mind.
For sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Mega Librarian has Frankenstein, the most famous film adaptation of Mary Shelley's novel. This is the 1931 version.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Karloff.
She also has the 1994 version, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, another adaptation. This one is closer to the book than the 1931 version.
Haven't seen that version. That's the Robert De Niro version, which I've never seen. Yeah.
And Frankenweenie is her third one. Lanthimos seems to have been aiming for Tim Burton aesthetic in Poor Things. Let's connect to actual Tim Burton take on Frankenstein.
There you go.
Yep. I didn't bring it up, but I was thinking about Beetlejuice, which we've already done on this podcast, and Edward Scissorhands both.
For sure.
As like similar aesthetic to Poor Things.
I agree.
Ron C. Yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say Frankenstein 1931 was on my list.
Nice.
Oh, nice. Okay, good. Ron C. has Oppenheimer, fellow 2023 Oscar heavyweight, both featuring a play on black and white and color scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Nightmare Alley, Defoe in a movie with a similar style, both visually and in tone.
Yep.
And the favorite, Lanthimos, Stone, McNamara writing, Ryan cinematography, Stacy makeup, and other crew connections. So that's the favorite.
Nice.
My brother Aaron has Bride of Frankenstein, obvious reasons, and a movie called Birth Rebirth, which he says is a Frankenstein-esque story.
Yeah, Bride of Frankenstein was on my list as well, because I thought that would be an interesting way to go from this.
Jim has Asteroid City. What better way to move on from Oscar month than to go to a film that was somehow shut out of Oscar nominations? While more grounded in Poor Things, Asteroid City shares a similar fantastical tone as well as Willem Dafoe.
I also Damien
Bernard and 14 crew members.
I also have a title connection if we did do Asteroid City.
Oh, you do?
Yep. I already have title connection in mind because it's a line from both films. So there you go.
Nice. All right. Alex O, I was thinking of going full Yorgos in my suggestion with Killing of Sacred Deer or even Dogtooth, but instead I'll pick my top Yorgos film, which is one that features Emma Stone. That is The Favorite.
Yep.
Another film with an animated corpse learning to live and love, that is Young Frankenstein. Ooh, sorry. Mm-hmm. Good news, bad news, Alex. We've already done Young Frankenstein.
But the good news is we have a podcast for you if you want to.
We do, yeah.
So Frankenstein and go back and listen to the archives.
Yeah. Yep. And a person seeing the world for the first time and becoming a sex worker, that is Midnight Cowboy.
Yep. Everybody's talking about me.
There we go. be easy to pick the song for the outro if we did that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Harry Nielsen. All right.
All right. Well, LT, hopefully, I know you said Frankenstein 31 was taken off your list, but hopefully you still have some on your list that are.
Yeah, The Favorite was also taken off my list.
Nice.
I've got Ex Machina on my list.
Yep.
You know, discovering the world for the first time and wreaking a little
Science
havoc.
Experiment. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Science experiment. There you go.
Yep. I've got the 1980 Elephant Man, the David Lynch movie.
Yep.
And I have a little movie that is just like a story of a woman in peril, basically.
Oh no.
It's called Shiva Baby.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Talk about horror movie.
That movie. Mm-hmm. I've got Bram Stoker's Dracula on here.
Yep.
Also Swiss Army Man.
That's a good one. I haven't seen that.
What is the connection to Swiss Army Man?
That's a reanimated. It's just an absurd reanimation type film.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then in sticking with the absurdity, I have Titan.
Mm. I haven't seen Titan yet.
I have a similar one to Titan on my list. For some reason, I have them connected in my mind.
Yeah.
That is talk about a provocative film. That is provocative for sure.
It very much is.
For sure.
All right. I will go next. So there's a movie that came out last year that feels like the title is very well connected to this movie. It's a independent movie called How to Have Sex.
Ah. Yeah.
A couple other things. Willem Dafoe in a creature feature, take on a creature feature, Shadow of the Vampire.
I think that movie is notoriously hard to find.
I know, but I'm throwing it on anyway because I care. Mm-hmm. A young person, quote unquote, goes out into the world and is met by all sorts of nefarious discoveries and nefarious people. AI, artificial intelligence. I think would be a very good connection to this. What else do I want to go with? So that's three. Ruffalo in a pretty absurd performance, surrounded by a pretty boy instead of a pretty lady, Thor Ragnarok.
That would be quite the connection between.
It would be so much fun to do Thor Ragnarok this week. Come on. And let's see, what else do I want to go with? Visually, this movie reminded me a lot of Grand Budapest Hotel, so I will go with that.
Mm.
And then
both too.
Yep. And finally, for my fifth one, the title connection writes itself. It's about a young woman going through adolescence and becoming a woman. And she asks God for help. Are you there, God?
There, God.
It's me, Margaret. It's me,
Did not get nearly enough love.
Did not. Fantastic. I loved it. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. So there you go. Those are my five. Zach, what you got?
All right. I have a ton on my list. You could have kept going. But the first one is Death Becomes Her, reanimated corpses. Yes. Also the scene where Godwin says, I'm drinking port for breakfast, reminded me of when Bruce Willis wakes up and he has a Bloody Mary first thing in the morning. And it's one that we've circled on this podcast like a million times.
So many times. Yep.
Yes. I am shocked that I am the one to suggest this, but Barbie, also nominated for Best Picture. I feel like it's like very similar. I mean, in ways, very similar journeys where it's like a woman going out and experiencing the world for the first time and being like being treated toxically.
The scene when Barbie bones all those Kens is like
it's implied. It's like sexual Barbie, and that's Barbie's like a Barbie. All right. Getting inside a character's head. We have a sequel to this movie coming out soon that I'm not that excited about, but I think that this original is great, and that is Inside Out.
Oh, nice.
Ah.
And speaking of getting inside a character's head, speaking of Christopher Abbott, Possessor, that is the one that is kind of like Titan.
Yes.
Possessor is awesome. It is Brandon Cronenberg, so it's David Cronenberg's son. It does have a little bit of body horror, but it's not crazy Cronenberg body horror, and it's like the movie just takes some crazy-ass turns, and it's very good.
I love that movie.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's another one that I saw I was not expecting to like very much, and I ended up loving it.
Is that the one that you watched recently and you told me I wasn't going to like it and I shouldn't watch it? Or...
Oh, I feel like there's a number of those.
Yeah, that's fair.
It does start off with a very graphic scene, the very first shot, but then it's like pretty tame after that. Next one, getting inside a character's head, kind of wearing a bodysuit. This is about an alien wearing a bodysuit. It stars somebody who just recently was on Saturday Night Live doing a wonderful performance, probably the performance of her career, as Katie Britt. That is Scarlett Johansson in Under the Skin.
Oh, nice.
It's a good movie.
Also, Jonathan Glazer was just nominated for best. He just won for best international, but also Zone of Interest, too.
She was so good at that sketch. She just absolutely slayed it. It was so perfect.
And I have a bunch of other ones on my list.
Yeah, I have a ton of honorable mentions. It's not even
I'm just looking to see if there's anything I want to add. I think let's add a fun Emma Stone movie that people love that I have not. I've only seen it once, and I thought it was fine, but people really love it. Easy A, Emma Stone.
Great movie.
I know I put one more than you, Brendan, but I feel like why not? Let's throw that one on there.
Whatever. It's all good. Do what you want to do. Cool. All right. I will take it from the top. La La Land.
Yeah, read what we got.
La La Land, The Favorite, La La Land Again, Belle de Jour, Norma Rae, 13 Going on 30, Frankenstein 31, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein 1994, Frankenweenie, Oppenheimer, Nightmare Alley, The Favorite, Bride of Frankenstein, Birth, Rebirth, Asteroid City, The Favorite Again, Midnight Cowboy, Ex Machina, Elephant Man, Shiva Baby, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Swiss Army Man, Titane, How to Have Sex, Shadow of the Vampire, AI Artificial Intelligence, Thor Ragnarok, Grand Budapest Hotel, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, Death Becomes Her, Barbie, Inside Out, Possessor, Under the Skin, and Easy A. Zach, you get to go first.
All right. And Latanya, just as a reminder, the way this works, you can pick any. So we're going to do a host pick and a listener pick, and you just can't pick anything that you've suggested, like anything that's on your list. So I'll start with a listener pick, and I will go 13 going on 30, because I think it is actually a very, like, it's kind of weird connection, but I think it definitely works, and we keep Ruffalo a month going.
Ruffalo March.
Yeah, Ruffalo March. March Ruffalo.
There you go.
Yep.
Right, I will go next. I will do my listener pick as well. It was on my list. I think that there's a really good title connection if we do it. Although, actually, do I want to do that? Or do I want to do... Oh, it's really tough.
Well,
just don't know that there are enough connections. All right. You know what? Never mind. I'm going to pivot. And I'm going to go with the 1994 Frankenstein, because I have not seen it. So I'm going to go with
I don't think that. I have either.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the 94 Frankenstein. So there you go. One that I haven't seen. And I think it'd be interesting to see that telling of the Frankenstein story.
Mm-hmm. All right. Latanya, if you need anything repeated, let us know.
Yeah, can you repeat the listener picks?
Absolutely. La La Land, The Favorite, Belle de Jour, Norma Rae, 13 Going on 30, Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, Frankenweenie, Oppenheimer, Nightmare Alley, Bride of Frankenstein, Birth, Rebirth, Asteroid City, and Midnight Cowboy.
The 1931 Frankenstein is just
sitting out there
like a necessity. And then for non-listener picks, I would probably choose Barbie, because I just think that would be hilarious.
Perfect. All right.
Any excuse to rewatch Barbie?
Brendan, you go next.
I will go next. For guest/host pick, I actually really like the idea of going to Ex Machina next. I think that's a really interesting idea. To revisit Oscar Isaac and Domhnall Gleeson. Yeah, Ex Machina. Yeah, I think is actually a really clever pick by ULT. I like that.
Thank you.
I have a terrible title connection that we can use.
Oh, no.
It would be Sex Machina.
Good night, everybody. The podcast is canceled.
It is, yes.
Sex Machina from the Whorehouse.
I'm so mad that nobody picked Death Becomes Her, I have to say. And I can't pick it.
What are you going to pick?
Well, I'm trying to decide.
It's a lot of good stuff.
And
up there.
Possessor. I have a great. My list was great. You guys.
Your list was great. That's true.
Hey, everyone did a great job, okay?
I will go with How to Have Sex, although I've heard that this is not what the title sounds like.
It's not.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Nope. But I think,
there's something that happens in the movie. That
oh, no.
Is, yeah.
All right.
Which made it all the more of a gaffe when Prince William was like, seemed like a lot of fun making that movie.
Prince William having a gaffe right now? That's crazy. Also, that movie's not streaming anywhere, Brennan. So I'm going to pick something.
I picked two non-streaming movies. Maybe I should replace them.
Yeah.
Maybe I should replace them.
I'm switching to Swiss Army Man.
Good job.
Because you've never seen it, and I'm pretty sure that one is streamable. So.
I love it when my picks are chosen.
Good job.
It does feel good, doesn't it?
It does.
I know, right?
Also, the Swiss Army Man was made by the Daniels, who had Best Picture last year, so it does sort of continue to.
Also, the only thing I know about it is there's lots of farting and there's a lot of fart jokes in Poor Things. So
yes,
We didn't even talk about
the gas bubbles.
Yeah, we did not talk about the gas bubbles at all.
Yeah, we could title connection could be Poor Farts.
There we go.
Fart Things.
Fart Things. I like it.
Well. Let's see what we got. So our final six. 13 going on 30. Where is that streaming?
13 going on 30. Probably Netflix.
Yep, and Hoopla as well.
Nice. Frankenstein 94. Probably not like anywhere. Canopy.
Showtime on Apple TV, otherwise it's rentable.
Okay. Frankenstein 31, I hope, is on Criterion.
No, it is on Classics, which I don't know what that is. I would imagine it's probably on YouTube, though. And it's rentable.
Barbie's on Max.
Yep.
Ex Machina is ironically not on Max. It's on Netflix.
It is on Max now. It is back.
Is it
on
now
Max.
On Max? It used to be on Netflix. Okay.
Yeah. It's on Max, and also then, Canopy as well.
Nice. Swiss Army Man is probably Amazon Prime.
Nope. Max and Canopy as well for Swiss Army Man.
Wow. Wild. Yeah. Okay.
So pretty streamable stuff. Yep. Other than the two Frankensteins.
Yeah. So maybe we take out the two Frankensteins.
Works for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Take those out.
13 going on 30, Barbie, Ex Machina, Swiss Army Man. I all are good connections.
I'm really happy with any of these because they're all very different. Ex Machina is the only one I've never seen. Or not Ex Machina, Swiss Army Man is the only one I've never seen.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do we think is going to be the most fun for the listeners?
I think Barbie, honestly.
I mean, it might be good for you and I to reevaluate Barbie now.
And if LT was just talking about She Loves Barbie, LT, if we could lock you in for next week.
Yeah.
Why not?
All right. Let's do it.
All right, let's do Barbie. All right.
Barbie with LT next week.
For a Barbie.
We'll figure out a day and a time. We might need to pick a time once I know what the March Madness schedule is the only problem. Of course. I will know that.
I have my own March Madness because it's gymnastics. College gymnastics season, and they have their own March Madness, so we're gonna have to plan around both our schedules.
Perfect. All right. Well, I'm traveling. We will figure it out. But next week's movie is gonna be Barbie. It is on Max only. That is the only place you can watch it.
Fun.
You can rent it as well, and you probably can get it from the library as well.
I'm sure you can get it from the library somewhere.
Nice. Yep. All right. And,
bye, Barbie.
Hi, and we get to compare two Best Picture nominees from 2023. Yep. I'm sure they shared a lot of other Oscar nominations.
I mean, there's something I said in my initial review of Poor Things that I will save until the Barbie review. So there you go.
Okay, cool.
Right. Relevant to both.
Easy to pick. And then I feel like a lot, I think some of the movies that came up this week can come up again next week.
For sure.
All right, cool. Barbie coming up next week. Brendan, do you have any honorable mentions you wanted to mention?
Oh, yeah. Honorable mentions that I wanted to mention. Crazy Stupid Love, obviously. Alice in Wonderland, also, I thought.
Oh, that's a good one.
Would have been a really good connection. Let's see. Begin Again for Ruffalo. Those are all the big ones. Rocky Horror Picture Show, for obvious reasons.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. I threw on my list last night as I was watching, because I thought it would have been fun. And Past Lives also, to bring up Past Lives again.
There you go. Yep. Latanya, was there anything on your list that you didn't mention that you thought would be good for next week?
Bottoms.
I love Bottoms. Oh, so yeah. Funny.
You also mentioned The Lighthouse, Zach. I did write down The Lighthouse, but it's like it wasn't a strong contender.
Yeah. Aside from other Yorgos movies on my list, I had On the Count of Three because it's Gerard Carmichael and Christopher Abbott are both in that. Where the Wild Things Are, from the word things, but also the font was the same, I feel like, between the two movies.
Yep, it was. Yep, yeah. The visuals,
Crimes of the Future, another Brandon, or that's David Cronenberg's Crimes of the Future. Yeah. Yep, another one about weird science stuff. And then this one is a Jonathan Glazer movie called Birth. I ended up going with Under the Skin instead, but the log line of Birth is the night of her engagement party, a young boy named Sean shows up saying he is her dead husband reincarnated.
Oh, yeah, this sounded really interesting. Yeah, this sounded really weird. I wanted to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that definitely could have been a connection, but I had like 20 things on my list. So, all right, cool. Well, we ended up going with Barbie. It is on Max. I imagine a lot of people have just recently watched it or watched it at some point in the last year. So send in your feedback at LadderMovie and MovieLadder@gmail.com. Latanya, what are you looking forward to watching between now and the next time that we talk next week?
Well, I'm obviously looking forward to having an excuse to watch Barbie again.
Good.
Honestly, I've just been watching a lot of television. So I'm looking forward to when we get done here, I'm watching the new episode of Australian Survivor.
Oh, there we go. I've not been watching that. I thought I was caught up on Shogun, and then another episode dropped this morning. I'm like, I just caught up.
Oh, really?
Shogun's been so good. I've been loving it. That's what I'm looking forward to watching the most this week, for sure.
Yeah, I'm starting that. I haven't started it yet, so
it's good.
I'm gonna start that probably tonight.
Nice.
Yeah, I think there's four episodes right now.
Yeah, I'm also an episode behind now because they dropped a podcast on my 6 Feet Under watch, so I need to watch an episode of that tonight when we log off. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know. I don't have anything in particular I'm looking forward to watching. I'm behind on all the challenges, so I probably should do something for those. I might do Breaking the Waves for Criterion Challenge, and Cinema Paradiso. That's probably what I'm looking forward to watching the most. I'm gonna watch that for Library Ladder. And speaking of things I'm looking forward to, I'm looking forward to seeing Brendan's face because I'm gonna be in DC this weekend, so I'm gonna see you in person. All right, and LT, any plugs? I feel like a podcast you were on might have just dropped on my phone while we were recording.
I just did the Oscars podcast for Post Show Recap.
It was, all right. Nice.
Which is exciting. Perfect. I did my first Brant Steele on the Pretty Little Liars podcast over on the Brazilian Dragon Network, which I will be doing more podcasts over there coming up as well.
Who hosts the Brazilian Dragon? Is that a Survivor Felipe reference? Right?
Yeah, it's Felipe Chamon's podcast network.
Oh, no, he's got a network. Wow, nice.
Yeah, he's got a whole deal over there.
Whole damn network.
And I'm more than likely going to be doing a lot of podcasting over there coming up, so that's exciting. Awesome. I'm here as well, and I'll be back next week.
Yeah.
You can follow me on Twitter at LK Starks or on Instagram at Stormborn1222.
Nice.
All right. Well, and LT, we're going to have you back next week, and we'll be back with Barbie, and we're going to dance the night away. We're just going to be Ken, and then that other song as well. We're going to hear all three of them. The one that actually won the Oscar, we're going to hear all three of those. We'll see everybody next week for Barbie. 2023 Oscar month continues.
No one knows how hard I try. Oh, I have feelings I can't explain, driving me insane.
Oh my, anywhere else we'd be a 10.
There you go. All right. Well, LT, we like to do at the end, we like to do letterbox reviews. like funny Letterboxd reviews that I read. And like there's some good ones that tie to next week. So this is from Laura. She says Barbie, but for mentally ill people.
So
that's
why good I love it.
Good connection to next week. Jay, borrowing one of those memes from the internet, says Mark Ruffalo, stop giving me your toughest battles. God, you are my horniest soldier. I love that. I don't know where that meme came from, but like the hand-drawn meme where it's like, stop giving me your toughest battles, and it's like I'm just like LeBron James or whatever, like it's like some athlete, like it's, I think it's always funny.
Yeah.
And Tyler says this should be the first movie Barbie watches in the real world. So should that be our title connection for next week?
Yes. The real Barbie movie.
Yes. All right. Well, and then here's a Frankenstein one. It says, I saw someone refer to this as the female version of Frankenstein, which is funny because Frankenstein was written by a brilliant woman, and this was quite obviously written by a man, which is similar to what Megan Librarian said in her review as well. One of the things.
I think the book it was based on was written by a woman, though, wasn't it? Or am I speaking
out of somewhere? Based on a man. Or written by a man.
Yeah. I did not know that. Okay. Interesting.
I saw his name pop up, but I don't remember who it was off the top of my head. Good way to end the podcast with not knowing the answer to something.
Yeah, good job.
Alistair Gray, which sounds like a Game of Thrones character, but it is
indeed.
Not.
Yeah.
He is a Scottish writer, and he his only book that's been turned into a movie is this one.
Well. Okay, so. Well.
Nice. Well, we'll see you in a week, LaTanya.
Yeah.
All right. Good night, everybody.